by more than 25%. The poles of Mars would be wonderful places to explore. Martian winds appear to carry dust to the polar regions, making vast fields of dunes. The layers of ground beneath these Martian dune fields may contain a wealth of information about the geology of the red planet. When scientists someday explore them, the poles of Mars may provide important clues to the planet's history. This is Stardate. It's written and it's produced by Deborah Bird. Stardate is a production of the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin, our zip code 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in...
Has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Changing the structure of racist America. Changing the structure of racist America. Changing the structure of racist America.
Deja vu?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Wake up!
Sind die Regenbogenfarben.
Wake up!
Bruder ist jünger als ich.
And a very pleasant evening to all of you out there. However many there may be, 6 minutes after 10 o'clock, and the program is Brain Damage. And we have a very special guest with us tonight, and very proud to welcome her aboard. It's the phone mail lady. Hello.
Hello.
How are you? We've been talking to you quite a bit over the last few weeks, and we're just wondering if there's anything special to what it is you do.
To enter an extension, dial the extension and then push enter or pound.
Uh-huh.
To enter your name, dial your last name followed by first name until recognized.
I see. And that's the secret, right? That's how everything works? Is that it?
If you are calling from your own extension,
right,
push enter or pound. If not, you may either enter your extension or your name. To enter an extension, dial the extension and then push enter,
right, well,
or pound.
All right, let me just ask
to
you.
To enter your name,
yeah,
dial your last name followed by first name until recognized.
Okay, now let's say that I don't have a name and I don't have a number. What do I do then?
If you are calling from your own extension,
right,
push enter or pound. If not,
that's,
you may either enter your extension,
okay,
or
yeah,
your name.
But
to enter
what?
An extension, dial the extension and then push enter or pound. To enter your name, dial your last name followed by first name until recognized.
Okay, let me just ask one more thing, okay? Now, you don't have a name, you don't have an extension, you have no way of doing this.
If you are entering a name, push stop or star. When you have finished dialing an extension, push enter or pound.
I don't seem to be making my point. Let me see if I can rephrase this.
If you do not push a key in 5 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Oh, if you're going to be abusive, you can just go to hell. For that matter, why don't we all go to Moscow?
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Once again, here's Joe Adamoff to answer your questions.
Wake up!
Jeffrey Allen of Miami, Florida, writes, the U.S. two-party system is not so wonderful. Everyone is complaining about hospitals, doctors, insurance. If the average Soviet citizen had a 30-year dose of U.S.-style capitalism, they'd beg to have socialism back.
You see, I believe you've got to take life in its entirety, compare all that is positive with all that is negative, and see which outweighs which. But generally speaking, it's with a heavy heart that I'm answering your question. I've been to your country several times. I've even been to your hometown, Miami. I stayed in Golden Beach. And what I'm going to tell you hurts me because the country of my birth, the Soviet Union, has fallen behind so drastically in living standards. It has fallen behind not only your country, but dozens and dozens of others. What I'm going to tell you has appeared time and again in our press, so it's no figment of my imagination. Yes, Jeffrey, I know your ills. I know you have the homeless. I know you have the unemployed and a racial problem and very, very much more. But your average standard of living is many times higher than ours. Take housing as an example. You, in the States, have 4 times as much floor space per person, 4 times, as we do. You have 10 times as many passenger cars as we do. The buying power of your average salary is much higher. Now, you mentioned hospitals. Have you been in ours? Yes, of course, they're free. But I think you would not want to be admitted to one of our hospitals a second time. Have you seen our invalids' homes or our senior citizens' homes, which have been shown many times on television? I won't even comment on that because it was simply awful. Then again, all through the years, to buy this or that product has been a problem. Now, I'm not engaging in beating myself or criticizing my country. I'm giving you the facts just as they are. And if you take life in our rural areas, well, it's even worse. Plus the fact, and you've got to take this into consideration, that we have lost tens of millions of lives in forced collectivization. Have you, my friend, gone through all that? I'm afraid you haven't. And the number of people here today below the poverty line is greater than in your country. Besides, our poverty line is lower than yours. Today, I really don't know who or which country has more unemployed, yours or mine. Well, Jeffrey, I could go on and on, but I'll stop here. That's why we are today, my friend, going through an economic revolution. We're going over to a controlled market economy. That is why we have introduced glasnost, or freedom of speech. That is why we have abandoned the Brezhnev Doctrine, and as a result of this, the Berlin Wall came tumbling down. Give us credit for that, my friend, but not for life under the so-called socialism of the past. What we want is a humane and a democratic socialism, a country where every man, woman, and child could enjoy a worthy life.
Jeffrey goes on to say, the U.S. media states that the USSR no longer supports Cuba. I find that very difficult to believe. Please enlighten me.
You see, when Mr. Gorbachev was in Cuba, that wasn't so very long ago, he said, we will continue to help Cuba. Then our Deputy Prime Minister Abalkin, he also visited Cuba not so long ago, he also said that we will help support it. We do have an agreement with Cuba, but you see, we cannot supply all the oil and food that we used to supply to Cuba before, because, for the simple reason, we just haven't got enough ourselves. That's a fact. Then, if you read our papers, you'd see that they're full of articles, and speeches to this effect have been made in our parliament, about aid to many countries in the past being one-sided, and this aid in the past was not of mutual benefit. And there is an outcry in the country that we should stop squandering billions and billions of rubles.
On a lighter note, Larry Warner of Harlinton, Texas, writes, we've heard that people in the USSR are very fond of ice cream. One of the biggest ice cream store chains in the country has named one of its flavors Gorba Chocolate after your president. From a listener of 33 years, here's to his success and world peace.
Well, thank you. Yes, we are great ice cream eaters, and we do believe that our ice cream has no equal anywhere, especially the type that we call Plombier. You see, I believe it's made from cream, not from milk. Now, speaking to the gentleman who asked the former question, Jeffrey Allen, I'd like to say, you see, I'm being objective. Not all in this country is negative. You know, the Dean of Canterbury once noticed that kids during the winter frosts here go around licking ice cream in the streets. He said, is it any wonder this nation won the war? You see, give us credit for that, Jeffrey Allen. We destroyed, for winning the war, I mean, we destroyed 3/4 of the Nazi military hardware. And for every GI 6 feet under, we lost 55 lives, 1 to 55. Had we not done that, there would be so many more of your boys in Kingdom Come. So give us credit for that too, Jeffrey. Well, Larry, I'm sorry for going back to the listener before you. He really upset me. Well, congratulations on being a faithful listener for 33 long years, and thanks for wishing Gorby success in his economic reforms. His success will be our success.
Bob Nagel, I think that's the way it's pronounced, of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, writes the following. I'd like to know why your military advisors have not been recalled from Iraq. It is hypocritical of your government to condemn Iraqi aggression while supplying military advice.
Well, hi, Bob. Well, first of all, they are not military advisors. They are technical specialists. Gorbachev said that there were around 50 left in Iraq. Our media has also noted that this is a ticklish situation keeping them there, and at the same time supporting the United Nations resolution. One analyst wrote, "We have contracts with Hussein, and if we break these contracts, we may never get the $6 billion that he owes us." Well, anyway, to sum it all up, Mr. Shevardnadze has said that all these military specialists, the technical military specialists, will be gradually withdrawn. The other day we heard on television that they're not giving exit visas to the civilian technicians and people working in Iraq, Soviet citizens, and there are about 5,000 of them. And just the other day, again, we hear that Hussein says that they may leave if they so wish. So let's hope he's speaking the truth.
Charles Dube of East Hartford, Connecticut writes, "After many years of listening to you, I finally decided to write. I enjoy the perspective you provide on the USSR. It's a far different world from that of Sergei Eisenstein or Franklin Roosevelt. It's your reporting that helps make listening to political changes fascinating."
Charles, I'm no less fascinated than you are. You know, Sergei Eisenstein, the great movie director, used to come to our studios and give a weekly review of cultural events in the Soviet Union in the English language. And he would always ask yours truly to go over the text with him for, you know, pronunciation and any minor errors. I considered it an honor, believe me. You know, I never met Mr. Roosevelt, but I interviewed Eleanor Roosevelt on two occasions. I told her that her husband has gone down in the history of my country as the great American president. And you may also find my physiognomy in her autobiography, only I was very much younger and very much thinner then.
William Reed of Pierre, South Dakota, says the following: "Your centralized economic and political structures have been failures from their inception. Should you not be seeking expertise to reform them, rather than preparing to embrace the free market?"
Well, we are having a lot of expertise. There have been people here from the United States, retired businessmen of very prominent standing. There were people here, also lawyers who were specialists in economy. I think we're using a lot of foreign expertise. Now, as for reforming our economic structure, we firmly believe that it simply cannot be reformed. That is the opinion of our best economists. Incidentally, we are not embracing the free market completely. Mr. Gorbachev said in Parliament, "The Shatalin plan for economic reform has been nicknamed the plan for transition to capitalism." Now, if you read it carefully and see the changes that will take place in the Soviet Union in the next 7 to 12 years in privatizing our industry, you will see that we'll have a mixed economy. Private property will play a substantial role in only some areas of our economy, but it'll be playing a limited role in society as a whole.
William also asks, "How would you react to the suggestion that perhaps Mr. Gorbachev has abandoned the socialist principle prematurely?"
I think I've just shown you that Mr. Gorbachev has not abandoned the socialist principle in its ideal form. He said our new society must let highly efficient employees, people with initiative and highly efficient enterprises, be able to earn more. They must enjoy freedom to create, freedom of initiative. They will also allow us to raise the minimum social guarantees for our invalids, our orphans, the aged, and the families with many children. Our society, our new society, must guarantee our people political and economic freedom. It must be a society of social justice. In other words, our society must become a true embodiment of the socialist idea, but not the socialism we had before.
A question now from the editor of the People's News Service, Madison, Wisconsin, Esty Diener. She says, "We are disappointed that you don't have the DX show anymore. We understand your financial difficulties, but this was such a short program.
Mrs. Diener, you don't hear the DX program in which so many shortwave fans were interested because we are very short of people. And its host, Maxime Tkachenko, is, I'm afraid, going to leave us. It may be continued in the future.
Philip Chambers of Peterborough, Great Britain, writes, in the factory where I worked, we had a suggestion scheme whereby workers submitted written ideas relative to improving production or working conditions. If successful in saving production costs, the worker was paid a financial reward. Does such a system exist in the Soviet Union?
Yes, it does. Any suggestion has to be considered by the enterprise where this or that worker works in 15 days or by the ministry in a month and a half. If adopted, a certificate is issued to the author, similar to that for an invention, which also gives him the right to a financial award. The rights of those who make these useful suggestions are protected by law. And every year, about a million or more suggestions are made, most of which are put into practice.
Politics is the subject of Harson Ross's letter of Opa-Lock, Florida. He writes, is there any difference between Leninism and Marxism?
Well, Marxism is part of Leninism. Lenin developed the Marxist theory of a socialist revolution. You know, it would surprise you to know that Lenin himself was against the term Marxism-Leninism and protested against it in no uncertain terms, because Lenin considered himself an orthodox Marxist, and was one. But the term Marxism-Leninism was finally launched by Stalin in his Short History of the Party. He, that is Stalin, falsified both Marx and Lenin and produced what we know today as Stalinism.
Well, Joe, I think it's time to round up with the joke of the week.
Well, we've had too much politics today, so the joke must be non-political. Little Nikolai and Olga come up to grandmother. Granny, can children have children? Of course not, Nikolai, says Granny. I told you, Olga, and you were scared, says Nikolai.
Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are welcome. Mailbag's on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday.
I can't believe they said that on the air. Oh, boy, that's the craziest joke they've ever come up with on that program. Oh, you were afraid. Oh, boy. We'll be getting letters on that one, that's for sure, Radio. I used to come up with these horrible jokes that didn't make any sense, but Joe Adamoff, he must have been over in New York while he wasn't on the air over there. It's 24 minutes after 10 o'clock. That was Moscow Mailbag, one of the most favorite programs on this radio station, I must say so myself. And over again until next week, maybe. Our phone number is 632-6901. We're going to be taking your phone calls real soon. We'll have an exciting contest and all kinds of other fun and unpredictable things. Unpredictable things like, well, you never know what. Hi, can I have AT&T, please?
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
AT&T, how can we help you?
Hello, I'd like to know the country code, please, for East Germany.
It's 49. Oh, excuse me, East Germany. German Democratic Republic, the country code is 37.
Okay, and what's the country code for West Germany?
That's 49.
Okay, now, I had heard rumors that they had united and that they're just one country now, so
well,
how does that work?
Rumor.
Is it just a rumor?
No, I think they really have reunited.
Okay, so what does that mean if I'm placing a call?
Now, the same as you did before.
So they haven't united in the telephone sense?
No, that'd be pretty hard to do overnight.
Uh-huh. Do you know when they're going to do that?
No, we haven't heard. I don't think they're going to.
Oh, dear. Okay, thank you very much. So much for telephone glasnost.
Wake up!
There's a foreign force moving in. And this is a force that has never been with us before. It's scary. It's large. And it's very unpredictable.
This is Mario Cuomo.
No, no, no. Are you ready?
Wake up!
Shut up! Sorry. Drivers, put your seatbelts on. Foreign force is getting closer. And we don't know if it's friendly or not. Do we plunge right into it? Do we avoid it? Or do we fight it?
Wake up!
Oh, let's just do it.
This is another monthly look at Sweden Today, and I'm Bill Schiller at Radio Sweden in Stockholm with these stories. Sweden rejects any unilateral moves to free its citizens trapped in the Gulf crisis, although relatives call for action. Swedes comment on the UN Conference on Children in New York. The ruling Swedish Social Democratic Party discusses future politics, and a debate continues over Sweden's Stonehenge monument of the past. All this in Sweden Today. Sweden has sharply condemned the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait and denounced Baghdad's refusal to allow all foreign nationals leave the crisis area. Stockholm has called for an international solution to the conflict and has rejected such unilateral action as Austrian President Kurt Waldheim's journey to Baghdad to free Austrian citizens. Over 80 Swedish men are still trapped in the conflict area, and relatives in Sweden have demonstrated and criticized the Swedish government for not doing more. Radio Sweden's Nidia Hogström asked Swedish Undersecretary of State at the Foreign Ministry, Pierre Schori, about this criticism from the relatives.
It's only natural that wives and children are extremely anxious to get their fathers back home, and that they will never be satisfied till they have them home, and therefore inherently they would say always want more, so to say. We have said, and we have talked to them at length now, that we are doing everything we can, and I have also given a long row of examples for this, and I think we more or less agree now that this is the right approach. The pressure we apply on Baghdad is of many kind. We are applying the UN sanctions 100%, and we have a discussion permanently going on with our demands in Baghdad and here in Stockholm with their representative.
Now, the Swedish UN ambassador, Jan Eliasson, is meant to meet with Iraqi officials. What exactly is his mission and what are his bargaining chips?
Well, he's doing the same thing as we all are who are meeting Iraqi representatives, telling them that they should get out of Kuwait and that they should liberate all foreign nationals.
But you said that no Swedish high-level officials would be sent to Baghdad to negotiate, but you did not exclude the possibility of lower-level officials doing the same. Is Jan Eliasson possibly one of these people?
We have said that we will not do what Kurt Waldheim did. Apart from that, we have said that we are not excluding any measure which is not in contradiction with the UN sanctions in its spirit. I don't think it is of great value to speak publicly about the various options we have, because everything we do and say publicly is carefully assessed in Baghdad.
Do you think the military buildup in the area is a help or an obstacle in trying to solve the question of the people detained in Baghdad?
I think it's important to have a military presence of the kind we have today to show that the international community means business.
But isn't it the problem in trying to negotiate the release of the hostages?
Well, we don't see the contradiction there. We see that a peaceful solution and the release of the foreign nationals will be simultaneous.
Meanwhile, Radio Sweden's Osiris Kyros talks to Valentina Hagenström, whose husband has been working for the Swedish telecommunications group Ericsson in Kuwait and was still trapped in Baghdad.
We started this action when we saw that it was very quiet here in the press and from the Foreign Office, and we got a feeling that nothing was done. We decided to turn to Saddam in a more familiar way to him. We conducted a letter to Saddam. This letter turns to the Arabic culture and to the Muslim idea about the family. And there we point that we don't understand how can he separate the families like this. And we're still waiting for the answer from him.
Some Swedes in Iraq have complained about the way the Swedish government is handling the whole issue. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I do. That's why we are trying to do it the different way, because we have to try and find some solution to the problem, because we are very worried for our husbands there and our sons and our fathers, and we want them home.
How hopeful are you that you'll be able to get out members of your family from Iraq?
Oh, I wish I could be more positive than I am now. We have hope, of course. We are trying to take any chance, any possibilities to help them. But it is getting smaller and smaller every day.
World leaders recently met at the United Nations in New York for the top-level summit on children. After many promises of good intentions to fight poverty, disease, and hunger, an ambitious plan of action was adopted, aiming at reducing the mortality rate among children under the age of five by a third. The head of the United Nations Agency for the Protection of Children, UNICEF, is a Swede. Speaking with Radio Sweden's Nidia Hogström, Lisbeth Palmer, the widow of the late Prime Minister, comments on the critical situation which the summit document is meant to help correct.
We have to realize that it is in the third world that the biggest problem are. That's where you need to build up the mother and child health care. You have to immunize children, you have to work with a malnutrition problem, and you have to give them a chance to get basic medical treatments. You have to work for a higher degree of education. There are still 100 million children who don't attend school. And there is a billion almost grown-ups who are not able to read and write. And they are to two-thirds, they are women. As it is the mother who is educating the child. And we know that an educated mother is more able to take care of the child. So this is unacceptable that the girl child is so badly treated in the world, because that's to treat the future in a bad way.
Sweden is the largest contributor to UNICEF's fund, something that the head of the organization takes great pride in. But Lisbeth Palme is very critical of other governments for not being quite as generous.
United States, they have a population which is 27 times bigger than Sweden. So they could be so much bigger than we are in contribution. And it would three-double the whole budget of UNICEF. You can imagine how much more work we could do if everyone had the same sort of contribution than as Sweden has. And I'm really a little proud of that, that we have this contribution.
What makes you think that governments like the American one would be more willing to contribute more, to make more efforts towards the protection of children around the world now than they were a year ago, for instance?
Well, it has really been a tremendous change the last year. And I would say since 88, actually, when they started, the big powers, to negotiate concerning their armaments. And I think this is also a precondition of the possibility to have a summit concerning children. It wouldn't have been possible 2 years ago. They didn't talk in these terms. But when they can start to act in a more mature way, thinking of children's development as they are the future. If you educate a child, he will be able to contribute for the future in a quite different way, of course. And this is what is happening now. But it doesn't happen on its own. It happens because they have been forced to see that they can't live on this mutual armament. They can only live on the common security. If the people's movements around the world force each other to turn from armaments to development of societies and peaceful development of countries. But we have to work for it. They will never do anything we don't force them to.
In Stockholm, Radio Sweden's Asaira Kiros asked the head of the Swedish branch of the Save the Children's Fund how he feels about the declaration adopted by the politicians at the Children's Summit in New York, Thomas Hammarberg.
All will depend on whether they are serious about it and whether they start serious enforcement of what they have agreed to now in principle.
How much of this do you think is pure public relations and how much of it is genuine commitment to the problems faced by children?
I think it is both, and it's difficult to assess what dominates. I assume that some of them are serious, but also we know from experience that many politicians like to appear pro-child, probably thinking that that will give them a human face. But when it comes to the crunch, the tendency is that they run away from the nice promises they have given. But we still welcome this summit meeting because we feel that it is important for the future that so many of heads of state and governments have shown an interest and made statements which we then in turn conduce to pressurize them and push them to live up to what they have said during these 2 days.
Do you think there will be any particular commitments, say financially, for instance, to help special programs for children?
No, there won't be any financial commitments. In fact, President Bush had as a condition for coming that there should be no discussion about the financial side. So that has to be an important aspect in the follow-up, because it is not only a question of political will. For the poorer countries, there will be a need of more resources to be able to implement, for instance, the campaign against child mortality.
How about as far as the convention itself is concerned? There have been criticisms that it is not an effective instrument, that it is a very diluted document.
We would have wanted a more stringent text, and there are some points that we miss in the convention. But still, it's clearly a step in the right direction.
You say you miss some things in the document. What exactly should have been included?
For instance, we feel that the convention is weak when it comes to protection of children in war situations, armed conflict. The ban there on the use of children in as soldiers is weak, and it doesn't protect children above 15. And in fact, most of the child soldiers in the world today are between 15 and 16, and they are left unprotected by the convention, and that's a pity.
The convention is in the process of being ratified by a number of countries. Have there been any open objection as far as its ratification is concerned?
No, the majority still have not ratified, and we don't know what type of discussion is going on in those countries. Some of those who have ratified have made reservations. We hope that governments should avoid reservations, because if they do when ratifying, it dilutes the importance of the text.
Sweden will hold parliamentary elections next September. The ruling minority Social Democratic government is clearly worried, with recent public opinion polls giving the once dominant party less than a third of voter support, a record low. The Social Democrats have ruled Sweden for 52 of the last 58 years and are closely linked with the Swedish labor movement and the concept of the welfare state. Some critics insist the party has moved to the right and is badly split over major issues. The recent party conference, held every 3 years, re-elected Prime Minister Ingvar Carlson to another term as party chairman, as expected. But many agree he lacks the charisma and unifying influence of his predecessor, the assassinated Olof Palme. The party conference revealed the split over where this neutral Scandinavian nation is going on such questions as nuclear power, foreign ships carrying atomic weapons, and possible membership in the European community. Radio Sweden's Sarah Rockström reports.
After a long heated debate, delegates agreed to abandon a previous decision on when to begin the shutdown of Sweden's reactors. In a 1980 referendum, voters ordered an end to nuclear power by the year 2010, and this was then passed by Parliament. A few years later, anti-nuclear Social Democrats, with the help of the Centre Party, pushed through a parliamentary decision to begin the phase-out in 1995. As oil prices rise and concern about global warming grows, this quick shutdown of two plants is now being questioned, and the conference has now given the government a wide mandate to open negotiations with other parliamentary parties about the timing of the nuclear phase-out. The biggest surprise of the turnaround was an emotional speech by Environment Minister Birgitta Dahl, who has been the major champion of the decision to start closing nuclear plants in 1995. She now says she favours the open mandate because a broad parliamentary consensus is needed to guarantee the 2010 date for total shutdown. Nuclear power generates half of Sweden's electricity. The Social Democratic Party conference adopted a call for tougher restrictions on Swedish arms exports. The original resolution, adopted against the recommendation of the party leadership, ordered the government to introduce legislation stopping military sales to countries with forces outside their own borders. Critics immediately complained such a law would ban sales to important markets like the United States, Canada, Belgium and Holland. By some estimates, 65% of current weapons exports would be stopped. New wording was adopted after a compromise basically allowing current policies to continue. Swedish law forbids arms exports to conflict areas. Another attempt to take a tough stand on a divisive topic was watered down as the conference debated the sensitive issue of foreign warships with nuclear weapons on board coming to Sweden on courtesy visits. A report just released by the environmental group Greenpeace says US vessels have repeatedly violated Sweden's non-nuclear policy. The Americans refused to confirm or deny the presence of nuclear weapons on board, and social democratic doves want a ban on Navy visits unless the US changes that policy. Saying Sweden would lose influence in European disarmament negotiations, Foreign Minister Sten Andersson was strongly opposed, but he accepted a compromise calling for a ban in 2 years' time unless the US agrees to give non-nuclear guarantees.
Leading Swedish Social Democrats have long argued that joining the European community would harm Sweden's neutrality. But recently, top party leaders have indicated that a new
And the question is, in what way, how far, and so on. And the discussion must go on that level.
So you think that this question is basically decided that Sweden will join the EC sooner or later?
Yes, I think so.
Do you think there's a majority for it at this conference?
Oh, I don't know really, but we have had many discussions in the party about that, but the development of Europe, the development of the EC is going in a way that you can still protect something in your own country. So I think that's opening a lot. It's very important for us to keep our neutrality, our security politics and so on.
So it would be an affiliation with reservations?
Oh yes, I think so.
But don't you think you should be in a hurry to discuss that now?
I don't think it's coming up in the agenda in Europe until 93.
The non-socialist opposition parties are hoping that the Social Democrats will lose enough voter support to give them another chance to take over and run Sweden. Some want an immediate decision to join the EC. Others want to continue running the country's atomic power plants long into the future. But these and other questions divide the opposition. Ernst Klein, editor-in-chief of the Östgöta Correspondenten, a liberal newspaper favoring the opposition liberal party, comments like this.
I think it's been a very strange conference because, the party is in a crisis. It's lower in the polls than ever before. And it has studiously avoided debates on the big issues and has had enormous debates on some quite peripheric problems. Big issues like what should the ideological basis of the party be in view both of its low standing in the polls and the fact that socialism in Eastern Europe has collapsed. And another big issue is what should the relation of Sweden be to the European community. There was no debate at all on that matter. Peripheric issues is things like should foreign warships that might have nuclear weapons aboard, should they be allowed in Sweden? Should we have a law again in Sweden to prohibit shops from being open in the evenings and on Sundays?
And why do you think the big issues were avoided and the little ones were discussed at length?
Well, that the big issues was avoided was obviously because there was this feeling that the party is in a crisis and next year is an election year. And the divisions are so deep in the party, so therefore no one really wanted to discuss them.
Is there a clear picture at this stage, then, as to where the Social Democrats stand on issues like energy policies in general, the environment, fighting high inflation and rising production costs?
I don't think so. I think the energy problems, which is certainly a basic issue, the division is very deep. The party leadership got a mandate that will make it possible for them to negotiate some kind of solution. But I think the problem might come back to the party. And when it comes to the economic situation in Sweden, I think the finance minister said at the conference that there is no room for any wage increases next year. But I don't think that the trade unions, who make up such an important part of the Social Democratic Party, will accept that.
Just one more of these Swedish stories, and we'll be back live. 632-6901, area code 516, the program is Brain Damage.
In Sweden, the Vikings and their predecessors have left behind many monuments made out of stones. Stones which have been set in the shape of a boat. The largest is in the far south of Sweden and is 67 meters long. It's called the Stones of Ale, considered by many as Sweden's Stonehenge. The Swedes date the ship setting to around 1000 AD, right in the Viking Age. But an American researcher, a professor of geography at Dartmouth College, believes this is really the oldest in the country, dated even before the Bronze Age, perhaps around 1800 BC. Speaking with Radio Sweden's Al Simon, Professor Vincent Malmström describes the Stones of Ale.
Well, they're a composite, really, of some 58 massive stones, each of them probably weighing between 3 and 3.5 tons, so we're approaching 200 tons in all, of stone that have been arranged in the form of a gigantic ship atop a bluff or a hill, overlooking the Baltic. It's about 30 meters or 100 feet high, with a sweeping view in all directions, 360-degree view. And these stones have been erected in such a way that the bow of the ship points directly at the sunset position on the summer solstice, whereas the stern and the rudder stone point out across the Baltic to where the sun rises at the winter solstice. So it's a gigantic solar calendar, if you will.
Is it possible that that was simply a coincidence?
Very unlikely to be, because a Swedish astronomer, also over at Chalmers Technical Institute in Göteborg, has measured the placement of the individual stones, and he has found that they have been placed with such precision that it's absolutely possible to pinpoint the day of the solstice with extreme accuracy. So this has a mathematical and a astronomical connotation not found in any other site, certainly within Sweden. And there are some 200 of these ship settings, as they're called, within the country.
Well, this brings up that confrontation there between you and the commission. The Royal Antiquities Commission of Sweden used to date them to the Iron Age, between 400 and 1050 A.D.
Yes.
But you disagree.
Yes, very strongly, because I think, first of all, we have several clues. One is the size of the stones themselves. This is totally within the context of the megalithic tradition, if you will, building with massive stones. The fact that it lies in a spatial context with other megalithic structures around it. The fact that, likewise, the bow, the stern, the rudder stone have been quarried and brought to the site. The fact that 200 tons have been assembled at the top of this ridge. Now, all of this took place, supposedly, if we're to believe the Royal Antiquities Commission, at one of the most troubled times in Scandinavian history. This was the period of the late Iron Age, 400 to 1050, well, that embraces precisely the great period of the Völkerwanderungen, the great Germanic migrations, followed, of course, by the Viking Age. Well, these were tragic, troubled, dislocated times. Certainly nobody was going to spend the time and effort in the midst of the Germanic migrations or the Viking forays to haul 200 tons of stone up to the top of a cliff to measure the sun.
What date, then, would you choose?
I think we definitely have to put it back before the Bronze Age, which would give us a threshold of 1800 B.C., because we're looking at a structure that definitely has all the hallmarks of Stone Age or Neolithic construction.
And this music from Sweden's Ragnar Grippi called Stonehenge brings us to the end of another look at Sweden today. This program has come from Radio Sweden in Stockholm.
Seems to be everything, huh? Yep, that's... Oh, no, there's a tone. We should listen to this, shouldn't we? Oh, all right. That was Radio Sweden, and that's the first time we've gotten something from them. Just like listening to a shortwave radio without the static here on Brain Damage sometimes. Heard from Moscow, we heard from Stockholm, and there's all kinds of other things we're going to be hearing from, mainly the people out there that are listening and have something to say. We have an exciting contest that we're going to be getting into after the hour. Oh, it's almost time for the tripods, too. We have to update their saga. I've got a couple other features, too, a couple other reaching out to various parts of the world. But basically, the crux of the contest revolves around the MIDI situation. Now, if you're good at predicting things, if you're good at analyzing world situations, and if you think you've got a handle on just what is going to be going on over there, well, you're in very, very good position tonight, because if you call us and you accurately predict what will happen between now and January 31st, that means if there's an attack, how the attack comes, does it come from the Soviets from the north and America from the south, do the Iraqis launch chemical weapons everywhere, do we nuke certain cities, if you can get as much information as possible down, you will win an album. That's right. You'll win an album from this radio station, and that is a guarantee. Now, to participate in this contest, you simply have to call us at 632-6901. Tell us what you expect to happen, and if and when that does happen, you will be getting a call from us or a telegram or something, some such thing. Maybe even a knock on your door. Who knows? So tell your friends. Tell your friends and have them call, too, because it's good to share things like this, I think. Anyway, you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. The program is Brain Damage.
Wake up!
Oh,
wake
boy.
Wake up! Wake up!
Okay.
Wake up!
It's one
wake
thing
up!
To to chant out, you know, and to keep urging people to do things. I'm all for that, but it gets kind of tiresome after a while, don't you think? If you don't have anything else to say...
Take the pillow from your head and put a book in it! It's time for the massive BDT crew at the top of the pile! Ha-ha!
That's better.
Yo, in the morning I'm yawning. At noon is when I wake up. Make up my bed, break up the bread and bed. Scratching my head, why am I so damn intimidating? Is it because of laws designed to keep us waiting and waiting, suffocating all forms of a setback? Get back! If you can't understand a rap act, this is the language of the people ready to hear the truth. I've got no juice, cause I'm not getting juice. To have juice means you kiss and lick a lot of booty. To have a sex means you simply knew a newbie. Heard what I had to say and felt it, so you say that too. I'm not down with a juke crew, but anyway, I say today the message I create is great. I don't pre-chase, I simply get the record straight.
Thank you very much. BDP there on WUSB. It's 2 minutes after 11 o'clock, and messages of all sorts will be going out today. Well, what's happening in the world? First story, of course, being the fact that Santa Claus was on the picket line. This happened yesterday when a company providing Santa service was fired. That's right, was fired by mall managers after an elf allegedly suggested he'd like to have a risque Christmas with a store employee. This comes straight from the Associated Press here. Bernard Zalnowski, president and head Santa Claus of Old Style Music Incorporated, said he and several other workers dressed as Santa, Mrs. Santa, and elves decided to picket the Seneca Mall to show the public the mall is playing Scrooge by firing them at the start of the season. Shoppers arriving at the mall just south of Buffalo were greeted in the parking lot by Santas for hire holding signs that read, "Out of work." They said the elf on Saturday, November 17th, had made a comment to a store employee that he wanted to molest her body. That according to Zalnowski, who says the store employee apparently complained to mall manager Lawrence Rose. Zalnowski declined to identify the man hired as an elf. On Sunday, Rose told us he wanted the elf terminated, Zalnowski said. They said point blank, if you don't fire the elf, we'll terminate your contract. Rose said the mall's attorneys have told him not to comment on any allegations concerning the elf. Right, okay. Still no clues as to why the smell of rotten eggs continues to hover over Port Washington, Roslyn, and Seacliff, mystifying North Hempstead officials who have been battling the problem for weeks and thought they had it licked. I can't figure it out, said Supervisor Ben Zwirn after walking the landfill yesterday morning with two residents, including Port Washington Water Commissioner Betty Forker. They're not moving any material today. If you stick your nose in the small pile that's left, there's no smell. He's referring to a stack of material that had been removed because they thought that was what was causing the smell. In fact, the smell is much worse in the community surrounding the landfill than in the landfill itself. Oh, boy. Something else to get used to is lovely smells in the air. You hear this? Two members of Menudo were arrested for drug possession. That's right, the Puerto Rican teenage singing group Menudo. Two of them were fired yesterday after being arrested at Miami International Airport and charged with possession of marijuana. Oh, God. Sergio Gonzalez, 18, and a 16-year-old whose name was not released because of his age, but you can probably figure out who he is since he's in a very famous band, and I'm sure his name is released there. Anyway, they were charged Thursday after a U.S. Customs Service dog smelled marijuana. Customs agents took small amounts of the drug from them. I wonder if that means they left them with enough to get through the day, or they only had small amounts on them. I'm not sure. I guess some people call them personal use amounts, but drugs are drugs, no matter what amounts they are, said Customs spokesman Joe Krakas, who was waiting to say that for 6 months. Oscar Lord, general manager for Sonotone Music, the group's Miami recording company, said yesterday the group's manager had fired the two singers hours after their arrest. Menudo has been around for quite a few years, rotating new members into the group as veterans grow too old to appeal to a preteen and teen audience, too old being, I think, 18, 19. Members were active in Nancy Reagan's anti-drug Just Say No campaign, and I knew they'd live to regret that. The group has been highly successful in the Spanish-speaking world, performing before sold-out stadiums throughout Central and South America. Members on Thursday were on a stopover en route from Mexico City to Venezuela. How do you like that? They weren't even coming into the country. Boy, that's pretty funny. War on marijuana. You know, I've been hearing more and more about that over the last couple of months. It's been like marijuana is the most dangerous drug there is, and it leads to so much worse stuff. Completely different things than we heard even 5 years ago. Just, I guess, hysteria. I don't know. Anybody out there who smokes a joint occasionally, do you feel like you're destroying your brain cells? I don't know. I think there's a lot more things you can be doing to destroy your brain cells, including probably listening right now. Well, what else do we have here? Oh, yes, the United States will lodge an official protest over brutal and vicious treatment by a Swiss security officer who shoved a machine gun against a U.S. ambassador as he tried to board Air Force One to travel home of President George Bush, the White House said. Boy, those Swiss. You think they're peaceful, but they're just aching to shove machine guns into diplomats. Of course, maybe he was running onto the plane. I don't know. The KGB, remember them? They've stepped up espionage activities in Germany, despite the new era of East-West friendship, according to a spokesman for Bonn's counterintelligence agency. While political leaders hail the Cold War's end, Soviet spies continue to search for German defense secrets, desperately needed technological know-how and political information. About 400 Soviet spies are working in the former East Berlin, according to one paper. And the federal government opened fiscal year 1991 with a $31.5 billion deficit in October, the first month of what is expected to be a record year for red ink. That's according to the Treasury Department. The budget gap was 21% higher than the $26.1 billion deficit of October 1989. $26.1 billion, $31.5 this year. The increase reflects the buildup of U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf and the escalation of the savings and loan bailout. Anybody hear this in the news yesterday? They found, they found two strains of the AIDS virus. It's HIV-1, HIV-2. HIV-2 is the one that's killing people left and right in Africa. Literally left and right. And it's transmitted in all different ways. Male to female, female to male, male to male, female to female. You name it, it's being transmitted in various ways. Obviously a much more dangerous strain of the disease. It's not very prevalent here in this country. But some folks were saying, some experts were saying that it could very easily get put into our blood supply. You know, it could find its way into the American blood supply. And we don't have the means right now to detect it. So we could repeat history all over again. You know, all those people that got AIDS from blood transfusions about 10 years ago or so. You know, and if we had only known, we could have prevented it. Well, now here we are again. HIV-2 only has a couple of dozen cases in this country, but, I mean, it's not going to pay attention to political boundaries, you know. It's not going to not strike people because they're Americans. It doesn't work that way. Once it gets started, it's going to spread just as rapidly as it spreads in Africa. It would cost about $60 million to develop technology to the point where we could find HIV-2. Test blood for it, test the blood supply for it. And they're saying they don't want to spend the money. They don't want to spend the money because it's not there for one thing, and they don't think it's worth it. $60 million. And how much are we spending over there in the Mideast? We spend billions. Billions, and we're going to spend billions more. Makes you wonder, you know? Makes you wonder just where we are, where we're going, who we are, and how much longer this can keep on the way it is. How about this? The Army, facing a possible manpower squeeze because of Operation Desert Shield, said yesterday that thousands of soldiers who had planned to retire or leave the service at the end of their enlistments will be forced to stay in uniform. That's right, the move, the first such freeze of Army personnel lists since the all-volunteer services were created in 1973, will mean that about 5,500 people per month who otherwise would have left the service will be forced to stay on indefinitely. The Army also said it is freezing indefinitely all transfers of soldiers from overseas assignments to bases in the United States and is canceling the Christmas vacation for all Army training centers and military schools. The freeze on transfers will affect 1,000 to 1,500 people per month, said an Army official who discussed the measures on condition he not be identified. I wonder why. These are facts, aren't they? The combination of measures is designed to keep the Army at the highest possible state of readiness in case additional reinforcements are needed for the Gulf crisis. Also yesterday, the Marine Corps... I'm sorry, I can't resist saying that, but it's going to be true soon. The Marine Corps disclosed that it had invoked a measure November 8th. That means as many as 12,000 Marines, both regular and reserve, could be prevented from leaving the service. The Army said there would be three exceptions to the mandatory service extensions. Those officers who face mandatory retirement for medical or other reasons, those soldiers discharged for reasons of incompetence or other failings, and hardship cases. Well, at 12 minutes after 11 o'clock, I'm beginning to wonder how much of a hardship case we're all moving collectively into. 632-6901, we're going to be taking your phone calls. We're going to start that exciting contest in just a couple of minutes. But first, it's time for what, based upon the reaction last week, will soon become a regular part of this program. Yes, we voyage over time and space and through the FM continuum to bring you the answer to the question that's on everybody's mind. What's for lunch?
Good morning. Today, Wednesday, November 21st, at all cafeterias for lunch, their hot and sour soup, Monte Crisco sandwich, and spinach crepes. Their hot deli menu is bacon, lettuce, and tomato. And at all three cafeterias Wednesday night, they're having a special to-go night. The Fanny Bryce Food Mall is open for lunch and dinner, serving Italian, Mexican, Chinese, and American favorites. Wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And on Sunday, the Union Deli and the Papa Joe's will be open. Papa Joe's will be open from 1 to 9, and the deli will be 1 to 8. And meal cards, A and B, and declining balance will be accepted. Have a great day. See you on Monday.
We like to add the homespun touch here on Brain Damage. Stay tuned for the tripods, and we'll be taking your phone calls and submissions for the contest. What will happen in the Middle East? Radio Free Long Island, in synchronization with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the thrilling adventures of the Tripod family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. As we look in on Kathy and Howard Tripod today, we see that they are at Charlie's cousin Herb's real estate office looking for a new house. And as we join them...
Oh, wasn't it nice of Charlie to tell us about this cousin of his?
Oh, it certainly was. And it just goes to show you that we can always count on a true friend like Charlie, no matter how bad things get.
Right. Just shows to go you.
Yeah.
I always thought of Charlie as someone who had never deserted a sinking ship.
Me too. Wait a minute. I'm not so sure I like that analogy.
What? A sinking ship?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't mean to imply that the tripod family was a sinking ship.
I certainly hope not.
We've sprung a small leak, perhaps, but everything's under the control. The bilge pumps are working, yeah. I think.
Well, it will be once we find a new house, and I sure hope that Charlie's cousin, Herb, can give us a helping hand as far as that's concerned.
I think he should be able to. I mean, just look at this office.
Damn.
It's so big. Wow.
Yeah, it looks like he does a lot of business in this place.
Yeah, and just look at all those diplomas.
Oh, yeah.
He's got one from the Madison School of Real Estate in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh, and here's another one from Piscataway.
Wait a minute.
They've got a very good reputation over there.
They misspelled Piscataway. There's a T, not a D in Piscataway.
Oh, I wouldn't know about those type of things.
Anyway,
here's another one from Paducah, Kentucky. He must have gone to a lot of schools.
And Champaign-Urbana.
How about that?
Topeka, Kansas.
My goodness.
And one from Croton.
He must have spent half his life in school to go through all this.
Yeah, I never knew a real estate broker had to have so many degrees.
Oh, yes. It's almost like being a doctor from what I hear.
Hmm.
It's really, really hard to get into real estate.
My. Oh,
hello there. You must be Herb, is that right?
Yes, Herb Harrison is the name.
I'm Howard Tripont, your cousin Charlie's next-door neighbor. That is, I was until we lost our house.
Pleased to meet you.
And this is my wife, Kathy.
I'm so glad we were able to come by today.
We want to find a house as soon as possible.
Well, why don't you tell me exactly what it is you're looking for, and I'll see if I have anything available.
Oh, well, basically what we want is...
I've got just what you're looking for.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Why don't you finish what you were saying?
Yes. Well, we're looking for something that's not too big.
But not too cramped either.
Right.
About 6 or 7 rooms would be nice.
Yeah, and we need a garage for the car and a yard of some sort.
Mm. I've got just what you're looking for. In fact, we can go see it now if you want.
Oh, well. Oh, that sounds nice. Is that okay with you, Kathy?
Oh, fine. I really wasn't expecting to get something so quickly.
Neither was I. Is this house conveniently located?
Oh, yes, very. Oh, why don't we just go over and look at it? I'll take you in my car.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Kathy, why don't you go first?
Oh, thank you, Howard.
Two bedrooms and a garage, a basement, and 2 separate attics.
Wow.
This is really something, Howard.
It certainly is.
And as you can see, it's right next to a main road, so shopping and travel will not be a problem.
Sir, that's not a main road. That's the Long Island Expressway.
Yes, I never knew they built houses right smack on top of it like that.
And look at that driveway. I always thought that was an exit, but I never really knew where it went.
Well, it leads right to this garage. And I can assure you, this is a very private area. There's not another house for at least 3/4 of a mile.
Is it legal to enter the expressway using this driveway?
Oh, yes. You see, it forks off at the end over there.
Oh, nice.
So it can be used as an entrance and an exit.
Does anyone else use it as an exit? I mean...
Right. It wouldn't be nice to have people come tearing up our driveway thinking it was an exit ramp, would it?
Well, occasionally somebody might mistake this driveway for Route 110. But they usually realize the mistake when they see the house sitting up there at the end.
Yeah, well, that's good, I guess.
Yeah, we like to meet people, but not coming up our driveway at 55 mile an hour.
No, that's for sure. Oh, look at that.
So what's it going to be, folks?
Yes, we know. Well, we're going to think about it for a little while.
And so Howard and Kathy get a look at what just might be their new home. Will they take it? And if they do, what will happen? Tune in next week when we'll hear Kathy say...
How's the newsboy supposed to deliver the paper if he can't drive his bicycle on the Long Island Expressway?
That's next week on the exciting adventures of the Tripod family. This is Don Topeka.
Mario Cuomo for WUSB in Stony Brook.
Yeah, it sounded like Don Topeka was losing it there, but it's understandable. Ah, man, what a life of ordeal those poor folks lead.
Oh, I saw that house, too, the other day. But that's neither here nor there. It's 21 minutes after 11 o'clock. My, the time does fly, doesn't it? We've got so much we have to do, so much indeed. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Let's get those phone lines lit because I want to take some calls and some entries for the contest. Remember, if you accurately predict what happens in the Mideast, whether it be an invasion, a bombing, a complete withdrawal, or just world anarchy, you will win an album. But you have to predict accurately what will happen between now and January 31st. If you're predicting a bombing, who does the bombing? Where does the bombing come from? What cities are destroyed? How many people die? If you predict some sort of chemical weapons from Iraq, you have to predict where the chemical weapons are aimed. Are they aimed at us? Are they aimed at Israel? Are they aimed at Saudi Arabia? Or are they just aimed at the sky? If you predict a withdrawal, you have to predict who withdraws and when. Okay, in case of duplicate guesses, we'll decide who the winner is by how close a perfect match it is. So if you say that we withdraw completely and run home, and someone says we withdraw completely and run home on December 15th or something, and that's pretty much the day we do it, that person will win. It's quite simple, but I love contests. It's just so exciting. The album, of course, will be determined at a future date, but it will be a good one. It'll be new. It'll be unopened. And nice 12-inch vinyl, you know, that you can put on your stereo system. And, yes, of course, it will be in stereo. So join this exciting contest. Give us a call at 516-632-6901 and let us know what your particular guess is. We have two open lines. Let's fill those two open lines, and then we will go right to the phones at the moment. Let's go outside into the air. One more call. Yes, hi. Can I have AT&T, please?
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
Yes, hello. Can you tell me the country code, please, for Iraq?
Hold it. Check. Country code for Iraq is 964.
964. And would you have a city code for Baghdad?
One moment.
Guess what we're going to do, folks? Guess what we're going to do? We're going to try to get an Iraqi on the phone. Ooh, this is cutting-edge radio. City code for Baghdad. This is highly confidential
information. City code for Baghdad is the number one.
The number one. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, we're off. We're off to see the Iraqis. And what we're going to try to do now is call the broadcasting service of the Republic of Iraq. See if anybody's in there. See if anybody can speak English. And see if anybody will listen to us. And see if we can actually...
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the destination country you have dialed.
Oh, that's crazy.
Please verify the number and try your call later.
The number is verified. That's MCI for you. I don't know why I'm getting routed onto MCI. I hate it when this happens. Let's try it again. She comes on so quickly, you know. It's not right. Okay, what's happening? What's happening?
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the destination country you have dialed. Please verify the number and try your call later. 2EN.
Okay, we'll try it later, but I have a feeling this isn't going to work. I've also heard rumors. Well, maybe we'll get to this later on. Other international rumors. We seem to have a lot of calls here. I don't want to keep people waiting too long, so 632-6901 is our telephone number. Excuse me. Oh, boy. Before we get started, a very, very important person has something rather important to say.
Gabe Pressman, and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook.
That's something. I mean, I can't believe that Gabe Pressman actually came here and said that. Said that about us. I mean, I'm in awe, you know, that, I'm sorry. I just get carried away whenever he comes by. 632-6901, area code 516. Look at this, a full switchboard. Okay, good evening.
Hello?
How you doing?
I'm sorry.
Ah, yes, I got you, didn't I? Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yeah, I want to call...
Will you speak up, please? Speak up.
Yes. Well, I didn't realize you were on a delay there. I was wondering... I'd like to talk about...
Speak up, please.
I wanted to talk about the economy and what's going to happen.
What's going
to
happen?
Well, it's also going to have a lot to do with Saddam Hussein.
Okay, now, wait. Before you get started, let me just ask you, are you participating in the contest here? You want to predict what's going to happen between now and January 31st?
That is what's going to happen. I really don't have any set a real good idea, but I'm just going to ramble.
Okay, well, if your rambling is the closest that what happens, you'll be the winner. So ramble on.
Our invasion of Saudi Arabia in the Middle East was an economic must, because it's an artificial stimulus to the economy, which we've had spiraling downward, or let's flushing downward is a better word for it. So we're all over there keeping 500,000 people out of this job market, pulling our reservists out of the job market, because they're going to get laid off anyway. You're going to have Grumman working to build the fighter planes and the parts. And you're living in a country that only works on a crisis basis. Until it's a crisis, no one pays any attention. They let taxes and spending get out of hand. But when a postage stamp goes up to 30 cents, then the people start to go, I won't stand for this.
Right, right. Good point. Very good point.
What's going to happen over there is they're going to provoke something, or they're going to use some nonsense Bay of Tonkin type of incident to go to war.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Gulf, that's right. I'm thinking of Bay of Pigs, Gulf of Tonkin. It's the same old stuff. It's all political, economic nonsense.
Right. Well, now, do you think we're going to... I've heard all kinds of predictions from, the Soviets launching a strike from the north simultaneously with us launching one from the south, to Iraqis just doing something crazy because of our Operation Imminent Thunder. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I don't know too much about the military strategy, but I think they're just going to go in and attack them one way or the other.
Right.
And where they go from, it doesn't make any difference. If they put enough into it, they win. If they just want to pussyfoot around, they won't win. Just like they did in a couple other wars that were economically sound. And during the Vietnam War, the container company that sent all the material over to Vietnam was owned by the President of the United States and his cohorts. I think it was Seabreeze.
Yeah.
So he made some money by keeping a war going. Highly irregular.
Do you think we're going to make money by doing this?
No, no one's going to make money, but no one's going to notice where the money's going at the time. The money will just be spiraling around. It'll go this way. It'll go that way. No one's going to complain. You're not going to have any senator stand up and say, I don't want to go to war.
Oh, no, no. I've,
wants to go to war.
I've seen more opposition to this imminent war than I've seen to other things in the past. You know, certainly to the Panama.
By the enlightened few who realize it's just a farce. Mr. Bush will be out of it. He's only over there now because there was probably no way it was going to be any kind of firefight. The minute he leaves, who knows what he's going to let him do.
Well, he's back now, so that minute has started.
He's a liar.
Well, but without getting into personalities, what do you think is really going to happen? You think we're going to just sit around there until January 31st, or do you think someone's going to start shooting? And if so, who?
An ultimatum?
Sorry?
The 31st is an ultimatum?
No, that's my ultimatum, because we have to have a cutoff for the contest.
Okay.
There's no reason why we can't have fun with this.
I'd say to the ultimatum by the 31st, they'll probably have some kind of minor fighting around the holidays. They always do. One religion attacks another during its festivals at all times.
Right.
They'll probably have some fighting, and then into the new year, there'll be some kind of peace breakthrough that'll be artificial, and it'll be talked up in the press. And then you're going to have an all-out-and-out miserable kind of battle if they go to war.
Uh-huh.
I'm still saying if, because if someone gets paid off correctly and everyone gets what they wanted in the first place, the politicians, the kings, the emirs, and all the oil companies will call it off.
Uh-huh. You sound cynical. Are you a cynical person?
I'm not cynical. I've been paying attention.
Uh-huh.
Paying attention. I predicted the real estate drop. I predicted Jimmy O'Landy hating his job. I predicted a lot of stuff.
That was a major issue of the 80s, wasn't it?
For me, it was. He got a job I didn't have to.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thanks for your entry. I'm going to transfer you now to our secretary, who will take vital information from you. And
Vital information? This is going to be fed in some kind of national computer, and they're going to come after me for being an anti-war person?
Well, we already have all this data anyway, so we're just, you know, updating it. But no, don't worry about it. Just give whatever information you feel like giving. And
thank you.
And say exactly what you want. So hold on while I transfer you.
Hello, this is the phone mail system. You may now release the call or hang up.
Okay, and he's gone. 632-6901 is our phone number. Play in the exciting contest. Predict what happens in the Gulf crisis, and you may win an album. Remember, you have to tell us accurately what will happen between now and January 31st with as much detail as you possibly can. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good.
What's up?
How's your Thanksgiving?
You know, I went to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade again.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I walked all around, and, you know, ever since I was a kid, I've always wondered what happens to the balloons after they get to Macy's. And I found out. They turn up, and they come up 7th Avenue, and they all get deflated.
Yeah.
And I saw Kermit the Frog getting deflated. It was the saddest thing, because, you know, Jim Henson's been through enough this year. And they're stomping on this poor frog and getting him into this box. Then they wheel the box and put it into a moving van. And it's just so sad, and people are laughing, and the cops have their backs turned to all this.
Really?
It's a sick situation. And then, what's even crazier about the whole thing, Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, you got 2 million people floating around in the streets, and Macy's is closed. You know, what kind of stupidity is that? You got all these people in front of your store, you got the, you know, all the publicity, Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and the store is closed. Man, I don't know. I think that could have saved the economy right there, but they blew it.
Yeah,
so other than
I went
that,
to visit my uncle's checker.
Sorry?
He was pretty cool.
Uh-huh. Well, other than that, it was fine. You know, the holiday's okay. You visited your uncle?
Yes.
Well, how was that? Was that okay?
I can't hear you.
What, was that okay that you visited your uncle? I mean, did you have fun?
My uncle's checker was real nice.
Uh-huh.
We stood around.
Yeah?
For, like, 2 days. It was fun.
You sat around for 2 days. Well, let's, you know.
Yeah.
It's special times like that that...
What did you just get, like, a super delay thing, so...
Sorry?
The immature babies can't curse on the air, so...
I don't know what you're talking. We have no immature babies around here. None at all. We have a baby filter.
It's because you got this new type deal.
Nothing is new. Nothing is new. Nothing has changed. Everything is always as it has been.
Well, then how come...
Okay.
Take off the blinders and see what's going on. We can't just allow the oil industries and the big industrialists of the U.S. to continue running the nation the way it's been run.
Right.
Only for the short term. Everything has to be done with an eye towards the future. And as it is now, it's just rape and run.
Okay, I'm going to transfer you over. Thanks very much for participating.
Sure.
And there we go.
Hello.
He's being transferred, and the computer is taking care of his vital statistics. So if he's fortunate enough to guess what happens, he'll win that album. And, you know, I kind of hesitate to say good luck. Somebody's going to win this thing, right? Yeah. Secretary of State James Baker has finished another day of Persian Gulf diplomacy.
But he didn't win any commitments for a United Nations resolution authorizing force against Iraq. Baker met with Malaysia's foreign minister in Los Angeles after meeting with Colombian officials in Bogota. Both countries are key non-aligned members of the UN Security Council. Colombia's foreign minister says his country hasn't decided how it will vote. He says finding a peaceful solution is in line with Colombia's foreign policy. Baker says his meeting with Malaysia's foreign minister went well, but Abu Hassan says he offered no promises. Hassan says he'll return to his homeland for discussions with other officials. Baker says this is the last in a so-called series of consultations, though he will try to meet with Cuba on the matter. No meeting has been scheduled, and Cuba is considered a sure bet to vote against any resolution authorizing force. U.S. officials say the Security Council will debate a resolution next week authorizing military action to drive Iraqi troops from Kuwait if diplomacy fails. I don't know, you think there's any polite way to get out of this, you know, to say, come on, guys, let's, you know, we're all wasting time, we're all wasting money here. What's the point? Is there any reasonable way of doing this? And if so, what is it? Tell us. Because I think we all deserve to know. No secrets here, folks. No secrets at all. Wake up. Wake up.
New York Telephone System, help.
Thank you. Yes, hi. I need a AT&T, please. Here comes the recording.
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
Attention, how can I help you?
Yes, hi. I need a country code for Kuwait, which I assume is still a country.
965.
That'd be 965. Are there any city codes involved there?
No.
None at all. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right, we're going to try this again, but I have a horrible feeling about this, that because we chose... we didn't choose anything. The university chose MCI. Because of that, they're not even going to try to get through. They're just going to say, Kuwait, forget it. Let's see what the nice MCI lady says. Well,
your call cannot be completed at this time.
You didn't even try.
The country you have dialed. Please verify the number and
verify
try
your
call
head.
Later.
Get off the phone. Get off the phone, you stupid man. You see, if I was at my house, I could choose all different long-distance companies to make that call. But here, if you do that, you get one of these things. Oh, wait a minute. I never made it this far before. I was trying. That's what you get if you keep trying. Okay. Can't get through there. And we can't use AT&T because we can't bill it to any number. Oh, it's crazy. It's all crazy. Maybe I can call Collect. Hey, there's an idea. Let's get AT&T back on the line. Although I doubt Iraq or Kuwait is going to accept a Collect call from us, but hey, we can try.
Your telephone is trying to help you?
Yes, hi, I need long distance, please.
What area code?
This will be overseas.
Thank you.
What area code? You think I'm stupid?
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
She picks up a royalty every time that recording gets played, you know.
Agent, excuse me, how can I help you?
Yes, hi, I'm trying to make a Collect call overseas.
Okay, can I have the, city code and then the what country code?
This would be country code 964.
And the city code and the number?
City code is 1.
Number?
The country, I'm sorry, the number is 31151.
31151, all right. Thanks, you. My chin chin.
Thank you. She didn't ask me who I was, though. And of course, I've given out the number to everybody who's listening, all 250,000 people out there. So they'll get pranked. Hey, it's going through. But she's still...
How do you like to bill that call? I'm sorry.
I want to make that Collect.
Okay.
Generally what a Collect call means.
Collect, no Collect calls.
They don't take Collect calls?
No. The country don't accept Collect calls.
You mean the whole country doesn't accept Collect calls?
In this way, right? What country calling?
It's Iraq.
Iraq.
That's strange. Is it, they just don't accept Collect calls from us or from anywhere?
No, they're not the only one.
Uh-huh. Do you know if Kuwait accepts Collect calls?
Kuwait, I can check for you.
Thank you. Keep your fingers crossed.
Do you have the number right on?
Yes, I have it right in front of me here.
Okay.
Do you want it now?
Yes, please.
Okay, that'll be country code 965, and the number is 214-5301.
Okay.
Please, please accept this call.
Hold on a second. If you want to collect call, we have to connect you to a station operator for Kuwait.
I heard a recording start there. Do you know what that was going to say?
No, I don't. I shouldn't have let that happen.
Oh.
I just wanted to check for you.
Uh huh.
To see.
Is it possible to hear what he was going to say though? I was just curious.
Probably, sir, could be. Probably so.
I think you started saying due to something, but I was just curious what it might be.
I don't know, but I show here on collect calls. I would have to connect you to the IOC operator.
Okay.
The operator that we have on collect calls for calls to certain countries that do not,
Uh-huh. So I can make this through the IOC operator.
Yeah, you can make a collect call, but I would have to connect you to a special operator for that.
Okay, that's fine with me.
You want that?
Yeah, sure.
Kuwait now?
Yes.
Okay, please help.
Why would being connected to a special operator upset me? I don't know. To some people, that might be a traumatic experience, but not for me. I'm well-seasoned in being connected to all kinds of things. It's 11:48. Our phone number is 632-6901. Oh, boy.
AT&T, see, how can we help you?
I better collect call to Kuwait. Calling from an, screen code 97516-632-6000.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
You need to make a call to Kuwait.
I'm trying to make a collect call to Kuwait, yes.
Okay, our circuits aren't working to Kuwait, so they haven't worked since August 3rd.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that your fault or someone else's?
Well, they put a freeze... Here, I'll let you listen to the recording.
Oh, great.
They put a freeze on the circuits over there. So we're not able to get through at all.
Uh-huh. Yes, play the recording. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Due to an emergency situation in the country you are calling, your call cannot be completed at this time.
Wow. Okay. Well, that certainly brings home the gravity of it. Okay. Well, thanks very much for letting me hear that.
Uh-huh.
And thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, that makes me feel much better, though. I mean, not hearing that there's an emergency situation, but just the fact that... they didn't try to pull the wool over my eyes or anything like that. Anyway, our number is 632-6901, area code 516. We're still taking entries on the contest, and we've got to take a whole bunch in the next 10 minutes in order for this to be a fair contest. So let's get moving. Good evening.
I'm on.
Go ahead.
Am I speaking with Eric?
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the Middle East.
Okay, go right ahead.
I'm going to be right?
Well, let's hope so.
And you can keep your record album, because I think that's a pretty silly, morbid contest you got going there.
Oh, no, it's not. I mean, we're trying to raise interest. Too many people aren't aware of things like this, so if we hold a little carrot in front of their noses, it will make, it'll make people become more interested. Competition is the American way. Now, go ahead.
We're going to kick butt, like Panama, that guy Noriega.
Right.
Messed with us. We messed with him. We showed him. So
yeah.
A couple people got killed. That's the problem. You mess with the big guys. You
want
to pee with a big dog, so you lift your leg. This guy, Saddam Hussein, he's lifting his leg. We're going to get him.
Aren't we the ones that are lifting our legs?
We can lift our legs, too. That's why we're the big dogs.
Okay.
And what I'm going to tell you, the problem is, like in Vietnam, people like you in the media,
right?
You ruined everything. That's why we lost that war there. That's why we're going to might lose this. It's the only thing that's standing in the way.
We did ruin everything, didn't we?
Yes.
Boy. Well, anyway... okay, so you think we're going to kick butt? And anything else you want to get more specific about?
Yeah, going to be over in 20 to 30 days.
Starting when?
Starting in 2 weeks.
Starting in 2 weeks. Good prediction, sir. Good prediction. Hang on a second.
Hello.
Okay, and hopefully he's on his way to winning that record album. 632-6901. Predict what happens in the Middle East. Get it right, and you'll win an album from us here at WUSB. Just our way of... opening people up to world events and getting rid of an album or two. Oh, good evening.
Yeah, hi. Is this Eric?
Hold on. Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Good.
What's up?
This whole thing with the Saudi Arabia thing. The guy that just spoke is a moron.
Well, that's really not part of your prediction, is it?
Oh, no. But this guy thinking that this thing is going to last 30 days and we're going to kick butt. What a joke.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you think is going to happen?
I think it's just like the guy said before about the economy. That's the whole reason that we're there, the economy. This has got to be a dragged-out battle.
Wasn't it Baker that said to sum it up in one word, it's jobs?
Jobs, that's it.
Yeah, he did say, I don't know why he said that, but he said that.
I believe it. That's what I say. Jobs. Uh-huh. It's the only way that we're going to get back on track here. We are going through recession. Even Trump, what's Trump say? It's a depression, okay, in the Northeast here.
But what I don't understand is we're spending billions of dollars to be over there. Now, if we spent those billions of dollars over here, wouldn't the economy be in better shape?
Would it be in better shape? We got to get rid of people. We need people out of the scene here.
Well, we got 500,000 less people in this country now.
Well, this is a working age bracket that's leaving.
Uh-huh.
And you're talking about 500,000. They're leaving jobs. Somebody's got to fill in the space, okay? You're stimulating the places like Grumman's, Fairchild Hiller, and then all the smaller companies that have to supply these people with things, stupid things like ball bearings, paper clips, more letterhead, whatever. It's like a domino theory here. And a war that lasts will bring a lot more money into this country.
Uh-huh.
And that's my prediction. I figure it's going to be a long battle, a typical thing like Vietnam, and it's just going to be like a standoff, because this is the way that things will get rolling again. Prosperity.
Okay, well, that's your prediction then, so let me transfer you over. Thanks for playing.
Hello.
Goodbye. Okay, 632-6901. And someday we'll master that so we don't have to hear her say hello every time that we transfer somebody, but that's something else. 632-6901, tell us what's going to happen in the Middle East. Get it right, you'll win an album. Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
So you're wondering what you think's going to happen, or what, is this a contest or something?
Well, I want you to tell me what's going to happen.
Okay, all right. First of all, I don't think we're going to have any war, basically. I think the whole thing is a conspiracy. I think that Hussein has invaded he's liquidated the treasury, and it's just he's liquidated the treasury of Kuwait, and it's a conspiracy to manipulate world's gold and oil markets. And I think there is going to be some skirmishes in the desert, and I know there have been already, because I've heard about some wounded coming home already, although it's not being reported in the media, but I don't think we're being told the whole story.
Tell me what you've heard. Tell me what you've heard about that.
What have I heard?
Yeah.
I've
about wounded coming home from the desert, because, I mean, this is the media here, so let's hear it.
A friend of mine who goes to college in the New England told me that we're not being told the whole story because he's seen, you know, he's met some wounded who've come home already.
Right.
People have been shot. So that's
really?
That sort of thing. So we're obviously not being told the whole story.
Well, I'd sure like to know more about that. If you can get to that person and have him get back to us.
If I could get you more information, I will.
I'd sure like to hear that. I mean, I wouldn't like to hear that, but I'd like to get more information.
Okay. All right.
All right. Any other predictions you want to make? Any other predictions you want to make?
Predictions? I think this whole thing is going to be done by March. I don't think there's going to be... I think we'll be totally pulled out.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe it'll just be an excuse to form some military bases in Saudi Arabia. And that may happen, too.
That's another possibility. Okay, well, hang on a second. I'll transfer you over to our secretary.
Okay.
Hello.
Oh, isn't that exciting? 632-6901. She's got a great voice. Good evening.
Hello, Eric. This is...
Are you going to finish your sentence?
Yes. This is Andrew Goldberger.
Andrew, how are you? You were in the studio live last week.
Yes, I was.
Now you're at your home.
Yes, we have a message from Millie Vanilli.
I didn't even get into that controversy this week. This wasn't enough time, but go ahead.
Okay, this is Millie Vanilli with their message to the world.
Okay.
Hello, this is Millie Vanilli. We would like to say sorry for ripping the detail off. How, or as we would say in German, you can fail to mend your drive and through ghost fail to hide or dinger detail with yourself. to Eric for leave a great SDJ and D word.
Ah, shucks. I'm blushing. thanks, Millie Vanilli, for that, but I have a feeling that wasn't their real voice either. Good evening. Is anyone there? Anyone there? No one. Okay, good evening.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I'd like to tell you what I think.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, I think that Bush is going to go over there and chop off Saddam Hussein's dick.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a very interesting prediction. But we don't have enough time to get into all of the ones that are left. So 632-6901, we're going to take, oh, let's see, let's take one more call, two more calls. Maybe two more calls. Quick ones, though. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, should I say what I think we should do?
Yeah, go ahead.
See, here's the problem that we have in the Middle East. You got a country like Kuwait. That name of that country is the wrong name. You have Iran, Iraq. You need something in between. You need Iraq. IRAP.
Okay.
And you can, you know, you have Bobby Sands and the IRA to thank for that idea, not me. He came up with that 25 years ago in a Belfast prison.
Bobby Sands came up with that idea?
Yeah. Well, so that's my solution to the Middle East crisis. And then we can start a trend. With Israel, we can make it Iraq, and so on and so forth. Saudi Arabia could be Iraq. And there'll be a world order that will be created eventually, which will be matriarchal and loving, based on the first three letters of IRA.
Well, I think a lot can be accomplished by making every country's name a four-letter word.
Yeah, it would be beautiful.
Definitely.
Iraq is the middle ground between Iraq and Iran. It's very simple.
Is there any specific prediction you want to make between now and January 31st?
Between now and January 31st, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
It's going to be a big stinking war.
Okay, well, let's...
hope not, but there's going to be one.
Okay, I wish you luck on your entry. Hold on a second while I transfer you over. And may the best man win tonight.
Phone mail system.
All right. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah?
Hello, Eric.
Hey.
Hey, it's Sammy.
It's Sammy. Sammy, you could be our big winner tonight if you predict accurately what happens.
Where?
In the Middle East between now and January 31st.
Oh, in the Middle East. I got a lot of friends in the Middle East. They're over there in Karak.
Right, right.
They're fighting the Saddam Hussein. Some kind of, he's like the Iraqi strongman.
He certainly is.
Oh, and the Iraqi strongman.
What a man he is.
Did he lift weights or something?
I don't know, but it's the mustache. I think that's what does it. That's what does it for me, anyway.
He looks like Juan Valdez. He looked like the guy with the coffee bean.
I'd never thought about that. Listen, Sammy, you're going to have to wrap it up real quickly because we're about out of here. Power surge is on. In fact, power surge is here.
Okay.
Do you have a prediction, a quick one, so you could win this album?
I probably have a prediction that a lot of people are going to get hurt, possibly.
Okay.
A lot of people are going to get hurt. A lot of politicians are going to get defeated at the voting booth.
Okay.
A lot of people are going to be made sad if we got a war.
Okay. Well,
no one wants to see no war, except the economists, the bankers, and some other those people, the nouveau rich, and people like that. And I'd like to say happy Thanksgiving to all my friend Debbie Lowry and everybody.
Okay, well, I'll pass it along, too. I hope your prediction comes true, and here we go.
I like my friend Cassie.
Okay, I'm going to transfer you over. As we are out of time here, Raz, you can make a prediction, but as you are related to station staff, or you are station staff, or something like that, you are not eligible for our grand prize of a record album.
Right. And this prediction will be right.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
Saddam Hussein is not the mad. Oh, he might be mad. We don't know that for a fact. But he's smarter than a lot of people think.
He's angry.
Yes, he's an angry person. Saddam Hussein will not unleash chemical warfare upon Israel. Saddam Hussein will not be a person who will be backed down upon American aggression. Simply, as soon as we make the first strike, Saddam Hussein will destroy every single oil field and hurt America where it counts, in the pocket.
Okay. Well, that does sound reasonable, I guess, from his point of view.
Come on, man. The guy's smart. He's not stupid.
I mean,
been finished by now.
The guy is smart. There's no question about that. He's smart, but we're late, I'm afraid, so we'll have to get him. Discussion next week. We're going to change the pace a bit here. Thanks. You like that, huh? Okay. It's 2 minutes after 12 o'clock. We are running late here. And the program is Brain Damage. I want to thank everybody who called up and, again, thank those people who didn't. They know who they are. It's time for us to be heading out. We'll try to get through to Iraq next week and to Kuwait again next week. And who knows, maybe we'll establish contact somehow. Anything is possible. We can always hope for these kind of things. In the meantime, let's leave off with Billy Bragg. One of my favorite songs. Translated this time. See you later.
Stand up for victims of oppression, for the tyrants be your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing, you have no right. Let race this ignorance be ended, for it's the empire's fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended, and let's enjoy it by one and all. So
hi, this is Matt with the Concert Billboard for Sunday, November 25th. Coming up on Tuesday, the Phil Woods Quintet will be at Sweet Basil. They're playing there till next Sunday, December 2nd. On Wednesday, Lush will be at Maxwell's, and Nonfiction, Collision, Culture Shock, and Body Bag will be at the Marquee. That concert is free. Thursday night, John Valby will be in the Stony Brook Union Ballroom, and Lush will be at CBGB's. On Friday, Sepultura, Exhorta, and Atheist will be at Sundance. The Pixies will be at the Ritz. The Neville Brothers and Crash Vegas will be at Roseland. The Johnny Thunders will be at the Marquee. And Jesus Lizard and No Man will be at Maxwell's. On Saturday, December 1st, Rob Mullins will be at IMAC. The Liars will be at Maxwell's. Danger, Danger, Extreme, and Jet Boy will be at the Ritz. Hawkwind will be at the Wetlands Preserve. And Jesus Lizard move on to CBGB's. The Scofflaws will be at New York Avenue next Sunday, December 2nd. On next Monday, December 3rd, the Indigo Girls will be at the Beacon Theater, and Robert Fripp will be at the Bottom Line. Both in the Indigo Girls and Robert Fripp return to their respective locations on December 4th. Maxi Priest will be at the Ritz that night. Abdullah Ibrahim with Akaya start off at Sweet Basil. They're there until December 16th, but they take the night off on the 11th. Dave Sharp of The Alarm will be at Tramps, also on the 4th. On the 5th, Darling Buds will be at Woody's, and Alien Sex Fiend will be at the Marquee. On the 6th, Aztec Camera will be at the Ritz. Neighborhoods, The Neighborhoods, will be at Woody's. HR from Bad Brains will be at the Wetlands Preserve. He's also there on the 7th. Also on the 7th, the Scofflaws will be at Ugo's Valley. Don Dokken and Beggars and Thieves will be at the Ritz. And as they move on to Sundance, Don Dokken does with Trickster on December 8th. And Spyro Gyra will be at IMAC that night. Exene Cervenka will be at Maxwell's on December 9th. On the 11th, 12th, 14th, and 15th, Anita Baker will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Living Color will be at the Rock Academy on December 11th, 12th, and 13th. Edie Brickell on the New Bohemians, and John Hyatt will be at the Beacon Theater on the 12th and 13th. Got it? Okay. December 15th, Roy Clark will be at the Queen's Theater. Michael Hedges will be at IMAX. Special Beat with Ranking Roger and the Toasters will be at the Ritz. The Connells will be at the Marquee. The Goo Goo Dolls will be at Woody's on the 20th. The Scofflaws and Rudiments at Ugo's Valley on the 21st. On the 28th, Fish, P-H-I-S-H, will be at the Marquee. And Agnostic Front and Sick of It All will be at Sundance. The Ramones will be at the Ritz on the 29th. Concert Billboard is brought to you four times each weekday at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at 12 noon and 12 midnight. Just in case you missed anything, give us a call here at WUSB at 516-632-6901. And stay tuned to WUSB throughout the week for ticket giveaways. This is Matt here on WUSB Stony.